Okay, so today we're going to start talking not about the mitzvah of Yerusha Bechor, but the nature of Yerushat Bechor. And as we left off with yesterday, the Gemara has this phrase that already indicates that it seems to be different, which is Matana Kariyei Rachmana. It is called a present. What we want to try to do is understand how the Gemara understands Yerushat Bechor. Okay, now, as you saw, most of the sources here are the ones that look short, that Ellie mistakenly thought was just a line of sources rather than three lines that told you to basically read entire blocks of Gemara. And Yaakov rolled his eyes because that's how this parak works, Yaakov. That is just how this parak works. Fine. So let's start with, and we're going to try to take each Gemara in turn and see what it tells us about the nature of Yerushat Bechor. Okay? So, the first Gemara, what? Do you have your Gemara? Yes, it's quite a schlep to walk 50 feet.
Not to walk, but it's heavy.
Wow.
Good, it's exercise.
That's the exercise you get to Shiva. Raise the, do 20 bucks for races.
Yes. Fine. So the Gemara on Kuf Chav Hei Amud Bet
is where we will begin.
Okay. So the Gemara says 5-6 lines from the bottom. Amar Rabba, Mistabra Divinei Ma'arava. The rationale of the people in Eretz Israel, the name Ma'arava, the people in the West, makes sense. The Ikadam Stavta, Vizavna Zvina Zvine. Okay. I'll leave the details of that case on the side for the moment.
Are we going to get into the case where it's like the wineries and like the...
So we're just going to read the Gemara. Just read the Gemara.
The Rambam had a little bit of a dispute with that. His Rambam got it wrong together.
Oh, thank you, Ali. So let's get there. So the Gemara says, Amarav Papa, Hilchita, Ein Abal no tel bira'ui kimimuchzak, Vena Bechor notel biraui kibimuchzak. Vena noter Bechor notel pishnayim bimilve bain shigavu karka bain shigavu ma'ot. A husband does not inherit ra'ui like muchzak. So remind me, what does that mean? What is ra'ui? What is muchzak? Unrealized gains. Is that how Art Skull translates it? Unrealized gains? Okay, fine. That sounds good. And muchzak, a property that, yeah, not necessarily liquid, but assets, hard assets. Doesn't have to be liquid. Normally liquid refers to like cash and things like that, not like real estate, but real estate is clearly muchzak. Real estate is clearly muchzak. And the same is true of a bechor, that the chelek ha-bechor is... you only collect from muchzak, but not from ra'ui. So that could be a loan, right? That could be a tree, where you collect from the tree, but not from the produce that grows afterwards, right? That would also be ra'ui. And bechor, therefore, doesn't take from a loan for the same reason, because a loan is considered ra'ui. Whether the collection of the loan is from money or from real estate. Because you might have thought that if someone owes the father money and there's a lien from which, right, they're lien property which you use to collect, you might have said that that's considered muchzak because the real estate exists in a hard sense, and it has a lien on it already. Gemara says no. The collection of a loan is always considered ra'uy. Right? That's what the Rashbam clarifies here at the bottom. V'afilu b'shtar, even if the loan is done with a document, bein shigavu karka, bein shigavu ma'od, whether you collect the loan from real estate or from money, the lavai karka v'lav hani ma'od shafik lahon avohon, because neither the money nor the land was actually left by their father. Therefore, havel a ra'uy, it is only considered ra'uy. The exception is only going to be a loan where the father already held collateral in his property. Because then, since the collateral is in his property, therefore the loan is considered muhzak rather than ra'uy, but a mere lien doesn't make it muhzak, it's still considered ra'uy. Okay? Umalva she'imo Palvi. And a loan that the Bechor owed to his father, right? Rashbam clarifies, Bechor and his Chayv Laviv, Palge. Chelik Bechor yachloku b'nehen, iu malkei Palga, v'nozin lachiv Palga. You split what he owed to his father, davele maman amutal b'safek, because it's doubt. It's doubtful. Bechor can den yadui, chashu muchzak l'aviv, she Bechor rotzehu l'shabei nechasev l'aviv l'gamri u'bayin yafagamar, u'maksin echad l'aviv, k'dei she aviv muchzak v'achmil, v'vito ba'oto pishnayim, u'dim alo shna, yishar mal v'hilka falgi. What's the safek? On the one hand, it's a loan, and a loan is always
ra'uy.
On the other hand, and therefore, it should go back to the estate, right? The Bechor should have to pay it to the estate, and then it'd be redivided equally without him getting a double portion. On the other hand, you might have said since the Bechor knows that it's to his advantage for him to have given it to his father as a super strong loan, where his father basically owned all property that was leaned or whatever in advance, because then it's considered muhzak, if he gets it back double, even though it was a loan, he ends up on top. You might have thought that he gives it over in a more complete way. And therefore, since we're not sure which one it is, so if the Bechor borrowed $1,000 from his father, and there are two other brothers, so how much, so now do the math, right? How much of it, how do you divide it? Money that the Bechor himself owed to the father.
So he would collect
half of it. He collects as half of Bechor. And therefore, so you divide it into...
So is there...
Well...
Is it he borrowed it from the father?
So...
Two
sons.
Oh, my God.
So what do you do with it? How do you divide it?
You just collect half of it.
No, he gets half of the chelik b'chor, cholkin, halgin, which means...
Oh, a third?
No.
Which means he gets one part.
No. No. If you would reject the halacha of b'chor,
right,
then how much would he get? A third.
Oh, wait, there's something.
There's three total.
Oh, okay.
Three sons total. Three other brothers. The three brothers total. So if there were no Bechor, he would have gotten, if you don't treat it as Bechor at all, he gets a third. If you treat it fully as Bechor, he gets half. We treat it as half of Bechor. So how much does he get?
Oh, so like half of Bechor. Sorry. He gets a quarter. And then half.
Remember, he gets a third plus half of what he would have gotten as Bechor.
What is that, like five?
Right? He gets, because he never gets less than the he would get as a son. He gets half more. He doesn't get a full, 50%, but nor does he only get a third.
He gets 1.5 times less.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
No.
He gets the extra six, yeah. There you go. There you go, yes. That's what it is. Okay, and that's how the Rashbam understands it. Good. So Amarav Huna Amarav Asi. Bechor, so now the Gemara introduces a second halacha. Bechor shemicha, micha. A bechor who protests and says, I don't want my chelek ha-bechor. No. And then half of what he would have gotten as a bechor. But no, by the end he has to get 1.5 times what his brother gets. You have to divide 1,000. He has to divide 1,000 into
seven.
Yes, 3/7. Correct. He gets exactly 3/7. 3/7 is 13%. A seventh is 14%, more or less. So how is 3/7 13%?
No,
it is about 28%, yeah.
No.
2/7.
The other brother is 28%, he has 22%.
Yes, that right. That's right. Meaning he gets 2/7, they each get 2/7, he gets
3/7.
He gets 30.
Yeah,
there we go. 3/7. He gets 3/7, like 42%. There you go. Yeah. Fine. Amar of Huna Maravati Bechor Shemicha Micha. If a Bechor protests, he protests. What does that mean? Even though we agree that the Bechor doesn't get double of the Shevach, right, meaning the fruit that grew on the trees after the father's death, but if he protested and said, don't work on mine, I want it now. Later, after they let things grow. Right? He said at the moment of his father's death, I want the property now. And they didn't give it to him right away. Instead, they started working on it. Right? So now it's worth more than it was then. And now it goes up. He does get double. Because we paskin that the Bechor gets double even before the division, from the moment he expresses his desire to get his Bechor. So once he said immediately, I want my property, therefore he acquires it miyad, immediately, wherever it is, and therefore when it goes up in value, it's his. Okay? Good. So let's describe the situation. Okay? So, Avram dies on September 1st. Yitzchak says, I want my double portion. Well, Ishmael says, I want my double portion now. Fine? Yes?
Yeah.
Yitzchak and Midian and all the other sons say nothing. They just start working the land. Right? Comes Nisan, comes whatever, comes the spring, and Yitzchak has not, Yishmael has not collected yet. Correct, but he didn't actually take it. And therefore, in the meantime, the brothers pooled together and cultivated the entire estate.
Oh, but not Yishmael.
No, Yishmael's also.
Okay.
Right? So then the Gemara says, in that case, he gets double. But if he had said, if he had not said anything, then he would not have gotten double of the fruit. Why not? Because the fruit are Shevach. Right? Okay, let's back up. Fine? Let's say, normal case. Okay? Somebody dies. He leaves trees behind. Right? And now the trees grow fruit. Okay? So there are 3 brothers total, 100 trees. How many trees does he get?
50.
Good. Then the 100 trees produce 900 oranges. Okay? How many oranges does he get? 300. Right? Because he gets half of the trees, because the trees are his, right? There's a mukhtak, he gets double. But of the produce, which is shevach, he gets like any other brother. So you divide into thirds, not fourths.
Because
that's rough. Very good. Okay?
Okay.
Yes? What happens if these aren't trees that are going to grow by themselves? They need to be cultivated. Okay? So the brothers decide as a group that we're going to divide this after cultivation. Okay? So let's make this easy. Let's say there's no bechor. The oldest is a girl, right? There are 3 sons, none are bechor. So the 3 brothers that are alive say that they are going to cultivate the land and divide the land during the harvest season, rather than when the father died in the fall, let's say. In the winter, I don't know. Yeah? They're going to divide it after, right? They're going to work. They say, listen, we all get along. Instead of us dividing up the land, you get your 333 trees, I get my 333 trees, and we'll cultivate it separately. We're going to work together, and we'll cultivate the land, and we'll divide the land plus fruit in a year from now. Okay? So now, you have 1,000 trees, 900 oranges. How many did each of the brothers get? No before, remember? They each get 333 trees and a third, and they each get 300 oranges. Easy. Why? Because regular Yarshim inherit Ra'ui and Mochzak. And therefore, until they actually do the division of the estate, they inherit from the estate even Ra'ui. And therefore, even though the fruit was only Ra'ui, they inherit equally amongst the Ra'ui until they do the division. Yes? Meaning until they decide to claim separate property and leave it in the estate, anything that accrues to the estate becomes part of their inheritance. Right? So let's say the following. If they don't divide it up, so now they each get 333 trees and 300 oranges. But let's say they divide it and one of them is a better farmer, so his 333 trees produce 500 oranges. And his brothers each only produce 100. So then how much does each brother get? He gets 500 and they each get 100. Because once they claim the land, it's not part of the estate. It's their own private property. Whatever they do with it, they do with it. But until they choose to claim it and they leave it as the estate's property, even if one of them is a better farmer and he's 90% responsible for the oranges that are produced, it doesn't matter.
So there seems to be 2 periods of time here in conservation trees. One when the father dies.
And the other is when they claim the property from the estate. Exactly. So that's exactly the point. Until they claim the land and it's in the estate, regular Yarshim will continue to divide equally everything that the estate produces.
So until they claim it,
it's because since regular Yarshim inherit from Ra'ui, so as long as it remains the estate's property, they divide equally because they divide equally even in the Ra'ui, even if that which is produced is later. Right?
Because
it still belongs to the estate.
Okay.
Right? And therefore they always divide the estate equally. It doesn't matter how much you put into the estate. Right? As long as it's still the estate, when you divide it equally. Right? The exception to that rule is the Bechor. Right, Ellie? The exception to that is the Bechor, because the Bechor only inherits double from Mukhzak, which means that he only inherits from the value of that which was at the time of death. But if you divide a year later, so he gets an equal amount of the ra'ui, even though he gets double of the muhzak. So he gets 500 trees, even though he'll only get 300 oranges. Unless, and this is the exception case, unless what happens, when the father dies, the bechor says, don't cultivate my land, I want to take my 500 trees now. And his brothers ignore him and cultivate the entire property. Meaning, if they don't cultivate the entire property, meaning, the case here is where either they do cultivate it or it cultivates by itself or whatever it is, the point is that when he said, I want to divide it now, I want to claim my property.
He wants to take it from the estate earlier.
Correct. He wants to take it from the estate and they don't give it to him. Okay. Right? There's legal delays. And in the meantime, the state produces 900 oranges. Now, how much does he take? How many oranges? He takes 500 trees and how many oranges? 450.
Okay.
450 oranges. I know, I'm getting you ready for college again. Practicing your math skills. His brothers get 225 oranges each and he gets 450. Why does he, in this case, inherit Bechor-like in the estate, even though it's Ra'ui? Because since he protested and said, no, I want my portion, that means 500 of these trees now are his. And therefore, he's not really inheriting from the estate. They belong to him. He claimed it. Right? So the Rashbam therefore clarifies, what do you learn from this Gemara? That what's the critical moment? At what point does the Bechor become the owner of his double portion of the estate? Is it at the division? No. He says you don't need the division of the estate in order for the Bechor to become the owner of his portion of the estate. What do you need? To express his will to inherit. And the second he does that, he becomes a double owner in the estate, even before the division of the estate. That's what you learn from this Gemara.
Are the other sons allowed to represent for their own division
of the estate? It sounds like not, right? That's exactly what is that what you learn here is he gets a right in his double portion of the estate the moment he expresses the desire to divide the estate, even before the division happens. And therefore, even if the reason that it took 6 months was because you had to get the lawyers together to do the assessments and, right, all of that, even, right, there's no fault involved. It just took time. Still, the brother, the second he says, I want it, he gains the double right in the estate, what's called kodem chalukah. Before division of the assets, he already becomes the owner in potential of the double estate.
So when they ignored him in the division, was it anyway
they were just cultivating what belonged to him? Meaning, so I'm giving you an easy case where they cultivated against his will. But even if that's not the case, even if it's natural, right, forget cultivating, right? You have trees and they naturally grow each season and it just took 6 months to get the paperwork done, right? For whatever reason, the brothers live far away, the lawyer lives far away, it was COVID and no one was allowed out of their house, so all court decisions were pushed off by 6 months, whatever it is, right? Doesn't matter, right? For whatever reason, he said, I want to take my property right now, and it just didn't happen, and now the property is worth more, he gets double of the ra'ui in that case. Because all he needs to become the full owner of the land is to declare that he wants to take ownership of it, and therefore, even though you haven't in practice divided the estate, he already gets his double portion. Okay? That's what you learn from this Gemara according to the way the Rashbam understands it. Okay? So, there are three moments. There's death, there's the expression of will to claim inheritance, and there's the actual division of the estate. And our Gemara tells you that the Bechor, the critical moment, is moment two. Not three, not one, but two. Yes?
Yeah.
Good. If that wasn't confusing enough.
That was the first law in the Gemara.
What?
That was the first law in the Gemara.
Now, what? That was all I told you to do on this Gemara. Then I said skip down to later. Look, I told you. I told you, you were shocked. I said if you get past the Gemaras today, I will be shocked. If you get through all the Gemaras, I will be shocked. Right? Just practicing your reading and math skills here. I'm glad, by the way, we have reviewed multiplication, division, fractions, percentages, all these things that you haven't done in so long. When you take your, now when you're ready for your first math class in college, you will remember what these things are called numbers. Rami's like, nope, this didn't help me. I'm going back to remedial math. Rami, you're the one who wants to be an actuary. This should be easy for you.
No, it's like the thing is that like,
you think that this is as hard as what you do in actuary?
No.
If I have a 1 in 17,000 chance that I'm going to be hit by an ox that dropped out of a plane, it's definitely less than 1 in 17,000. There's no way that actually is true. I don't think that's actually how it works. I don't think that's really how it works. I don't think you are supposed to forget arithmetic just because you know how to do actuarial sciences. I really hope that's not how it's supposed to work. You don't remember how to do what? Well, this wasn't long division. This was division in your head. In my head, I wasn't doing long division. I think I intuitively knew how to divide 900 by 4. It wasn't that hard. Yes, that's what I just said. We just said that. That's why it was 450, 25 to 25. I didn't do that with long division. I don't know what I did that with. I just sort of... thinking fast. It's arithmetic, man. Arithmetic. Right? It wasn't like I asked you, like... Okay, quickly, off the top of your head, what is 18 factorial? I didn't ask you that. Now Robbie's trying to figure out, what is 18 factorial? Ellie's like, I'm going to put it into my calculator. There is no way that is right. Do you remember factorial? You know, 18 times 17, then 16, then 15, then 14?
Oh, that's not factorial. No, I didn't 18 times.
That's, first of all, 18 times 18 is 324. There you go. That would be very hard math to do in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we have calculators. You know, that is exactly why I have calculators. To figure out factorials.
No, where my theory, you're not going to have...
Yeah, you sound like my teacher who taught me factorials. Yeah, I remember very distinctly when I learned factorials. I was in eighth grade private advanced math because I like math, and Galina Spector was the advanced math teacher, and she taught us factorials. Yes. And that is exactly what she said when she made me memorize factorials and square roots and squares up to very high numbers. If I didn't know, like, that's why ad hayom, you don't need to tell me that 18 squared is 324, because I had to know that because she would randomly quiz me. And if I didn't know it, you know how I am when you don't know Tanakh? Right? That's what she used to do. Jonathan, you make me feel so sad. Right? She made me memorize these, you know, these things.
What if someone comes up with a knowledge that holds a gun to your head and says, I'll kill you, unless you tell me what 20 factorial is? You won't have to see your calculator.
Correct. Ad hayom. That is literally what she used to tell me.
Yeah.
It was, that was, yes. Fun times. Back when I did competitive mathematics, you know. When I was a little kid. I haven't done competitive mathematics in a long time.
So.
Yeah, she like ran like, it was advanced math that was meant to make you do well in these statewide competitions. You remember these? You're not New Yorkers, but like math counts and all that stuff.
Do you remember those?
I participated in them regularly.
Yeah. So that was what I did. I did pretty well. You know, it was fun. But that was the last time I did it. Like, and I won statewide a few times, and then, yeah, very impressive. I was a very, I knew fifth grade math really, eighth grade math in fifth grade really well. But yes, that then, you know, I decided to study philosophy and, you know, stopped with that. So the Gemara at the end of it, but still, the point of that was basic things like this, yes, she made me memorize, and therefore that those types of numbers I have to do in my head. You don't lose that skill. So the Gemara on Kol Chavav then continues. Amar Avasi, right? I just gave you a few lines to skip here, but going to the two lines. Amar Avasi, Bechor Shenatal Chelek Kepashut Viter. What does that mean? Bechor Shenatal Chelek Kepashut Viter. I just skipped like 10 lines, yes. I'm at the two dots now. Did you want me to go through the very complicated case of the Anavim Bitrum? We can.
I mean, that's what we did. No, we just did.
Would you like to?
No, you're not. We didn't do this.
Because I left out the case because it had other factors in there.
Wait, so
I just give it to the two dots.
Yeah,
give it to the two dots. So, Amaravati, Bechor Shed Notal Chela Kipashut Vitya. What does that mean? Thank you. I know that sounds exactly like the way you normally talk, Rami. A firstborn child who has taken only that of a single son, he has relinquished his right to the double portion. Meaning, if a Bechor comes in and he says, ah, there are 900 trees, cows, right? And he takes 300 and then says, it was good to see you, Reuven and Shimon, or Shimon and Levi, I'm going home. I'm taking my 300 cows, good night. Right? So then what's the halacha? Viter. Meaning, he now gets 300, not how much should he get? Very good. Look at that. You figure out 450, just subtract to 300. Very good. Look at all the arithmetic. See, Rami, I told you. You're just as you're pursuing actuarial sciences, doesn't mean you've forgotten your arithmetic. No, you got it right. You got it totally right. Very good. So, Bechor Shenat Al-Khele Kepashut Viter. My Viter, the Gemara says, Repapa Mishmei Derapa Amar Viter Ota Tadeh. Says Viter only means that he gave up his double portion in whatever you happen to be dividing. But not that he showed that he was giving up on his right to the double portion in the entire estate. Repapi Mishmei Derav Amar Viter Bechol Anechasim Kulan. And if you thought this figure couldn't get more confusing, this is just a minor complexity, that the Bari Plukta here are Repapa and Repapi. So pay attention, because if it weren't confusing enough, you now have to remember Repapa versus Repapi. Okay? Good? So Repapa says that field, Repapi says the entire estate.
So when you said it before now, what does that actually mean? Is it a pair?
No, it's divided equally amongst the brothers, and he doesn't get double.
But then,
he didn't?
I mean, that additional... So then he just removes the...
Repapa says... He gets 300 cows, and his brothers can now keep their 300 and 300. Repapi said it's more than that. If they, the second he did that, if there is, he's Jeff Bezos' son, and there's $180 billion in the estate, so then instead of getting $90 billion, which he should have gotten, he will only get $60 billion. Because since he only took 300 cows, that shows that he only wants $60 and not $90 billion.
What mechanism are they using?
Viter. He waived rights. It is a waiving of rights.
But I thought the oral was kept on.
This is what we're trying to figure out, man. We're trying to figure out the nature of Yerushat Bechor. This is what we're doing. I didn't say this was going to go fast. I'm pretty sure I said it would not go fast. Okay? I told you, just Gemaras. Just the Gemaras. Understanding the Gemaras are going to take time.
Not
to me that a what? I haven't posed a question yet.
So I haven't said this to see. So then, like, I don't know. If a random dude, like, just, like, walked in when the person was like, here's my, I'm going to take these 300 cows down to Dubai, and then, like, this random outsider takes the additional 150 cows.
No! It goes to the estate. It means that, no, it's not a random, it's not healthcare. Viter. He waived his right to inherit double. So now the Gemara says, Rapapa, which made the Rabbam, or Viter both of Sadeh. Rapapa quotes Rava saying only in that field. Why? Because Besavar, Ein Lo Bechor, Kol Dem Chaluka. What's Rapapa Svara? He doesn't have any rights until division, and therefore the fact that he divided that field or those cows has no bearing on the rest of the estate because you can only waive rights to that which
you have,
and his rights only come to expression at the division of the estate. Kasavar, Yezbol, Bechor, Chodem, Chaluka, Uvid, Achil, Baha, Achil, Bechulhu. Rapapi, on the other hand, says, at what point does the Bechor gain rights to the estate?
As soon as the
before Chaluka. Right? Now, have you noticed that this is in tension with the Gemara that we read only 10 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Yes, because the Gemara before says, when does the Bechor get his rights? Kodem Chaluka, as soon as he expresses will to take the property. This Gemara now has a Machlokes, where Rav Papa claims that he has his rights only come to fruition at the actual Chaluka. Rav Papi says that his rights come to fruition at some point before, though he doesn't explain when.
So is the first Gemara just
well, this is why you have to read the Gemara and figure this out. Isn't this what I'm trying to do? I want to figure out what is the nature of Yerushat Bechor. When does he get it? What does that tell you about Yerushat Bechor? But if you haven't noticed, there is a glaring problem already right here in the Gemara. The Gemara says, they never even said these positions explicitly. We derive them by implication. Because it was once the gate of the Bechor who was selling his part of the estate as well as his brothers. Right, so what happened? The orphans, the children of the non-Bechorahs, went to eat the fruit from the property of those who bought it. Why? Because they said... Why? Because they thought it was still theirs, meaning the brothers didn't have the right to do that. So what did they do? Machunhu, they punched them. They punched them. They attacked them physically to stop them from taking their property. Amri lehu, krovim, lo mistaya didavintu nilinachsayu. Ela mimcha nami machitu lehu. They said, this is not nice. Not only did he sell the property without our permission, now he's beating us up for it. Or we're being beaten up for trying to claim our rights. Atu lukimeg di Rava. They came to Rava to complain. Amar lehu lo asa v'lo klum. So what did he say? The Bechor did nothing. I mean, the Bechor had no right to do that. And then the question is, what does it mean he didn't do anything? Mar savar lo asa klum v'palga. One said it means that he did nothing in half of it, and one says he didn't have any rights in all of it. Meaning, is it that only in the chilek of the Bechor he didn't have rights? Or is it even in the chilek, huh? Sorry, other way around. Meaning, b'chelik pshituta b'chol shekein b'chelik pashut achiv b'chelik b'chor yafem achar d'yesh lo l'b'chor kodem chalukah. Is it that it was only in the chelik ha-pashut where he needed to wait for the division, like the brothers, but in the b'chor he was allowed to do it? Or b'chulu, meaning afilu b'chelik b'chorah shalchu mitam Bechor shemachar chodem chalukah lo asa klum. They send from Eretz Yisrael the Bechor who sells before chalukah did nothing. Alma ain lo Bechor chodem chalukah, which shows you he has no rights before division. V'hilchata yesh lo Bechor chodem chalukah, and we paskin he does have rights before, as Rashbam says. V'imachar omachal lo natal chelik echad kepashu v'iter bechol nechadim kulan mishum dematana kariyech mana. It's a gift, the Rashbam says, and therefore, because it's a gift, that's why he doesn't have to wait until division. And then he tells a story of dividing up these peppers, right? And he says, since you were mevater on part of it double, you're mevater on the entire thing. So the Gemara here is a machloket, whether the Bechor gets his rights in the double portion from either the point of division of the estate, which is when he gets the rights in the chelek ha-pashut, meaning like any other brother, because all brothers only gain rights when? At the division of the estate. But the question is about the chelek ha-Bechor. Is it that he gets it as immediately at death? Why would he get it immediately at death? According to Rashbam, because matana kariyei rachmana, it's a gift and not inheritance, and gifts don't have to wait for the division of estates because it's a special gift that doesn't require division or not. Yes? Now, there's a lot of problems. And the nafkamina for the Gemara is whether his waiving his rights applies to the entirety of the estate or only to that which has already been divided, and whether he can sell his chelek ha-bechor without permission, or he needs permission, or the division of the estate. Right? Those are the nafkaminas. Now, there's a lot of problems in this Gemara. Let's point out the problems. First of all, the Gemara we read before said, as the Rashbam understood it, at what moment does the bechor get the rights to the land? Right? Again, moment one, death of the father. Moment two, when he expresses his will to take the estate. Moment three, when you actually divide the estate. So according to the previous Gemara, at what point does the Bechor get his rights? Two. According to this Gemara, according to Rav Papa, when does he get rights? You're asking me or something?
Well,
no, okay. So according to Rav Papa, who says that he's beat there only otasta death, when does he get it?
Three.
And according to Rav Papi, that he's beat there b'chol ha-yerusha, Yaakov, when does he get it?
One.
So here we have in a single blot between Kuf Chav Hei Amud Bet and Kuf Chav Vav Amud Bet, we have one Gemara which seems to not be subject to Machloket that says that he inherits at moment two. The immediately following Gemara has a Machloket, Rav Papa and Rav Papi, of which neither position says two. They argue on one or three. Okay, so maybe it's not, you're right, maybe it's not a time when he said it, right? So maybe two is not in the equation, right? That would be one solution, right? Would be, but it's, again, the Gemara clearly says Rav Papa is talking about moment three, Rav Papi is talking about moment one. It doesn't tell you whether there was a moment two, right? But it's clear in the first Gemara that no one thinks that he gets it from.
I mean, the first Gemara.
Yeah, exactly, right? Meaning that's not even raised. So the second, right, the first Gemara says he gets it at moment two. The second Gemara says he gets it either at moment one or moment three. And what's the rationale for the position that he gets it at moment one, meaning at death? According to Rashbam, Matana Kari Rachmana, the only Yerusha you wait until division of the estate. But since the Cheren Kabachor is called a Matana, it's called a gift. Gifts don't need to wait for division. It goes automatically, and that's why it's at moment one.
Yeah, but,
and therefore, what would the other Shita hold? That's not Matana. Right, the one who holds that it's three, according to Rashbam, then what does that mean? It's not Matana, it's Yerusha?
Yeah, according to the
first. No, is that what would be Ola, according to Rashbam? Probably, right? That the Machlokes is a meta Machlokes. That whether you say moment one or moment three, the Machlokes is what? Whether you think that Yerusha Bechor is a Matana or not a Matana. Right? Is a Matana or Yerusha? Meaning is it double Yerusha or is Yerusha plus Matana? Correct. Right? And that's part of the problem, is that the Gemara, correct, the first Gemara seems to clearly indicate that if it's not two, it's three, not if it's not two, it's one.
Correct.
Correct. Right? So therefore, we have a lot of problems here, because the first Gemara says that he gets it at moment two. The second Gemara says one or three, right? And according to Rashbam, that seems to be the Machloket, whether you think that the double portion is double Bechor, double Yerusha, rather, or Yerusha plus Matana. Yeah? Confused yet?
Yes.
Okay, good. We're not done. I wish we were done. So far, we just have to get the facts down in the Gemara, right? Just the facts. But you see how they're really trying to get to the essence of Yerusha Bechor. Great. Okay, we've only been doing Shir for 47 minutes, but I'm going to ask you honestly, right? Even though there's another Gemara, even in Bava Basra, do you have the wherewithal to do this today, or is your brain spinning and you want to wait for tomorrow? Because if your brain is spinning and we're just going to have to repeat everything tomorrow, then I would chazer what we said one more time and call it quits for today, because I do understand that this sugya makes your head spin. It makes my head spin too, right? It's a very confusing sugya. Bechor is very, very confusing. We're dealing so far with a seeming contradiction, correct. That the Gemara in the context of Ra'ui, in the context of inheriting Ra'ui, let's clarify it again. In the context of inheriting Ra'ui, right, the Gemara says that the critical moment is two. Is if he says, I want the property, then at that point he starts inheriting what accrues from it, and therefore he inherits essentially at moment two, when he says, I want it. If there is no moment two, then when does he get it? Moment three, meaning at division. Meaning he has the right to declare that he wants it. Right, that's explicit. The Gemara says that when it comes to inheriting Ra'ui, if he says, I want the property now, i.e. moment two, he starts inheriting, right, he starts acquiring the produce. If he never does that, then what's the critical moment?
No.
Three, the division of the estate. What is never even raised as a possibility?
One,
which is death. So the purpose of inheriting Ra'ui, the Gemara says it's definitely not moment of death. If he doesn't say anything, it's the moment of the division of the estate, moment three. And if he does say something, it's moment two. When it comes to the relevance of Yerusha Bechor for two things, the ability to sell, the right to sell and the ability to waive his right, the Gemara says, let's leave aside possibility two, but suddenly with the Machlokes, Rav Papa and Rav Papi, whether it's death, moment one, or division of the estate, moment three, and according to Rashbam, that hangs on the question of Matan. So there are different contexts. Right, there are different contexts. The first one is the question of Ra'ui versus Mukhzak. The second one is the ability to waive rights or the ability to sell. In that case, we suddenly see a position for the first time that raises the possibility that because Matana Kari Yachmana, even though normally Yerusha is only inherited fully at the division of the estate, three, because Matana Kari Yachmana, it might be moment one. That was a possibility that wasn't even raised in the case of Ra'ui versus Mukhzak. Right? Yeah, right, it wasn't raised in the case of Rutley. Right? So that's the tension we have to deal with, which is why in the context of Rutley versus Mukhzak, did the Gemara take it as a given that the only possibilities are two or three? Right? Meaning the division of the estate, or if he wants to push that up, Floney claimed it. Whereas the second Gemara says that there's a position that at least in terms of the ability to sell property or to waive his rights to property, the critical moment might be death because Matamatari Rachmana. Right? But that was a possibility not even raised in the first Gemara. Okay, so now tell me. We've reviewed this, right? Are you ready to see another Gemara or what? Okay, anybody else? Yaakov, no. Rami, yes. Ellie? Your brain's dead. It's not, okay, but it's just a question of whether your brain is working. We have two who said this is too confusing, right? One who says I'm all ready. Okay, so you know what? How about we compromise? Okay, here's what we'll do. I'll leave you guys to do the Bava Basra, the third Bava Basra Gemara tomorrow, but let me help you with the Gemara in Bechorah. Okay. So Rashbam already said that the magic here might be. Right? The only reason to think that Yerusha of Bechor is at moment one and not moment three, meaning the moment of death and not the moment of division of the estate, is what? The phrase, Matana Kari Rachmana. Okay? The most radical case of Matana Kari Rachmana is the case in Bechorah, where the Gemara says as follows. Okay? It's pretty easy to follow the pshat, but I want you to think about this tomorrow. Okay? I'm going to leave you with this question, and then I'll let you go. The Gemara says, the Elohim calls it the Yoga. What things go back during Yovel? The general rule is by Yovel, right? Everything, right? What goes back? So this is machloket in the Mishnah of Bechorah. Bechor, right? The double portion of the Bechor goes back, does not go back. Hayorish Nishko, inheritance from a wife. Miyavim Eishnachot, the inheritance, the inheritance that goes back to the Yavam. Vamatana. And a gift, Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, even gifts do not return in Yovel. The Chachamim say, meaning if I give you a present of my ancestral land, it never comes back to me. Okay? The Chachamim say it's not true. Matana Kemecher. That just like if I sell my property around me, it comes back to me in Yovel. If I give it to him as a gift, it comes back in Yovel. Okay? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kulon Chozer Yovel. Realizer says all of them go back in Yovel, including, for our purposes, the chelek of the Bechor. So the Gemara says, my time is the Rabbi Meir.
I'm curious, like, what circumstance would it be that the inheritance of the Bechor would end up not, like, it would happen with someone else?
What do you mean? It means it goes back to the estate and therefore is now divided equally. If you think the Chelek Bechor returns the Yovel, that means that the thousand, right, the $1,000, or the thousand, no, we now need land, right, the four parcels of land amongst the three brothers, that means that when the father dies, it goes two pieces of land, one and one.
Yes.
And then in Yovel, you redivide it amongst the heirs to a third, a third, a third. One and a third, one and a third, one and a third.
Okay, this could be something true.
Yes. 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 Every 50 years. Correct. Yes. That's exactly what it says. So the Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, what's the reason for Rabbi Meir? Mecher hudam rachmano lehazer v'yovel matani rushalot. So very simply, Rabbi Meir in general is the only sales. The Gzeres because of Yovel only applies to sales. It doesn't apply to presents or inheritance. But then the Gemara asks the obvious question. But what about the Bechor, then how could you argue about Bechor? What's the Gemara's, right? Why, therefore, is Bechor raised as a possibility, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, actually rejected and said that it goes back? So what does the Gemara say? Because Matana Kari Rachmana. It's not normal Yerusha, it is Matan.
So, I read the history, but like, so effectively what does it mean that like as soon as the control was divided among the salt trucking. So then I mean based off that you will divide each and every.
Yes, you'll have to keep redividing. You know what? We'll pick up with this, but I just wanted to open you up to it, okay? But what you see is the Gemara has a very radical assumption of what the nature of Chelek Bechor is, okay? We have one more Gemara in Bava Batra. There's a Gemara in Kuf Chavdalet. Once you have all that together, what you're going to see is that trying to put all this, basically our goal for at least tomorrow, if not 2 days, is to piece together all the evidence. Right? And what does that tell us about Bechor? And I gave you Yad Ramah, the Ran, and the Ksot, who present three different ways of piecing together all the evidence in terms of understanding what exactly the nature of Chelek Bechor is and what that means in terms of when you inherit its nature of the Chulei. Okay? Fine? Good luck.